both, and we'll go to the next case, U.S. versus Ritter, 12-2359. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Jensen.
If it pleases the court, Mr. Koenig. My name is Jeffrey Jensen, and I represent the appellant, Keith Ritter. In 2003, Mr. Ritter was living in California, and he was receiving Social Security disability income for his mental illness. Near the end of 2003, Mr. Ritter's mother, Joyce, who resided in Sheboygan County, Wisconsin, passed away. And Mr. Ritter testified at his trial that he believed he somehow notified the Social Security Administration in California of the fact that his mother passed away, that he was an heir in her will, and he would be receiving money. Not long after that, he moved to Wisconsin, to Sheboygan County. We know for a fact that as of September 21st, 2004, the Social Security Administration was aware of the fact that Mr. Ritter was an heir and that he had received a share of the estate, because in the letter, Exhibit 17 from the trial, which is also in the appendix, the Social Security Administration wrote to Mr. Ritter, quote, "You never answered our questions about the settlement of your mother's estate." And they go on to ask how much he received and when he received it. So there's an acknowledgement that they knew he had received a portion of his mother's estate. So the issue is very simple. Whether that evidence violates 42 U.S.C. 1383A, which provides that it's a crime for a person to conceal or fail to disclose the occurrence of any event.
And so he was asked very directly, you know, what the, you know, about it and what the amount was, and he never disclosed it. Disclosed receipt of the $180,000 in his account.
That's correct. And the reason I don't think that that may be a crime of some kind, probably is a crime of some kind, but the argument is it doesn't violate 42 U.S.C. because that statute makes it a crime to fail to disclose the occurrence of an event. And as this court has said in the past, the dictionary shouldn't be a fortress for the statute. We should look to the purpose of the statute, and it seems apparent to me that the purpose of that statute is to put the Social Security Administration on notice that some event has occurred.
No, the purpose is not to put the SSA on inquiry notice. The purpose is to require disclosure of the material facts. Why isn't it perfectly reasonable to read this statute so that the event in question is not his mother's death, but the transfer of the $180,000 account to his sole control?
I agree. That is the event. The transfer of title from the estate of Joyce Ritter to Keith Ritter is
the $180,000 passed outside her estate, correct? She had set up the account so that he would have survivorship rights?
I believe that is correct, yes.
Okay, so it doesn't, we're talking about two different transactions, the $39,000 inheritance and then the $180,000 brokerage account, right?
Correct.
And that was really never disclosed.
It was not disclosed when he met with this Mr. King in April of 2004. But, the government has been, from the beginning, dismissive of my interpretation or our interpretation of the statute. But I really think it's the government that's attempting to rewrite the statute. The statute does not say having knowledge and failing to disclose facts that would make you ineligible to receive Social Security.
Okay, I'm still having trouble. What's wrong with interpreting event here as the obtaining of sole control over a $180,000 brokerage account? Why is that an unreasonable reading of the statute?
There is no problem with interpreting the statute to require that Mr. Ritter identify that event. the disagreement that we have, and I guess the question we're asking the court to answer for us, is whether that means the details of the event, in other words, the numbers. And I don't believe that the statute requires that because it says event. It does not say fact.
And of course, there's been no court that's agreed with your theory.
I was not able to find the courts saying much of anything about what event means in 42 U.S.C. 1383. But
I think the correct answer to that question is that it would be a shame if this court were to be denied the opportunity to be the first to adopt such a just interpretation of the statute.
Yes, and it would be a shame if the court were denied that opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Mr. Koenig, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right.
There are several incorrect ways of pronouncing it.
Thank you very much. I was taking a guess there.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jonathan Koenig, and I appear on behalf of the United States this morning. I guess I'd like to begin where the judges left off with their questioning, and that is with the statute itself. Of course, it speaks of an event affecting one's initial or continued right to benefits. And that's why we think the reading that Judge Stadmiller gave to the statute and that we urge in our brief is a reasonable one. But I would also like to point out this is a sufficiency of the evidence challenge. I would urge the court not to fall into the trap of focusing too exclusively on this September 21st, 2004 letter. That was far from the government's only evidence that Mr. Ryder failed to disclose the brokerage account. That letter is, I think, itself evidence that supports the government's supports Mr. Ryder's guilt, especially because he never did respond to the request for information. The letter is bookended by notifications about the $2,000 asset limit, and one of those followed in a month after the September 21st letter, reminding Mr. Ryder again, you know, if you have assets of more than $2,000, that's something you need to let us know about. There was a series of letters advising him that changes in income or resources had to be reported.
Yeah, and the language was pretty specific in the letter. You have never answered our questions about the settlement of your mother's estate. We need to know how much you received and when you received it. So there was no ambiguity in that request.
I don't think so, Your Honor. The jury obviously didn't think so either. And, of course, in the same year that that September 21st letter goes out, in April, Mr. Ryder sat down with Mr. King, face-to-face interview, and they review various questions that go to one's eligibility. And he says, I only have $4 in cash and $300 in my checking account, at which point in time he's got somewhere in the neighborhood of $190,000 in the brokerage account. So I think when you look at the evidence as a whole, it clearly supports Mr. Ryder's guilt, and we would ask you to affirm.
Can I ask you a couple of quick questions? Has restitution actually been paid in this case yet?
I don't know the status of restitution, Your Honor. I'd be happy to look into it.
It probably doesn't affect our consideration.
I do know Mr. Ryder was recently released from custody in December, so I'd be surprised if there were any substantial payments.
Well, was he using up a lot of this money? In the brokerage account?
I'm not sure the status of that either, Your Honor. He bought a house in 08, I believe, and that brought the balance down significantly.
Given that it's a financial crime, what efforts has the government made to collect the penalty, the loss?
So I'll be happy to look into that, Your Honor, and let you know.
And do we know what condition made Mr. Ryder eligible for supplemental security income?
In 1993, the determination was that he had some kind of affective disorder.
We really don't know the details.
I'm not sure exactly. From the PSR, it's clear that he has had a very emotionally troubled life, and I won't, you know, go into all of that. There's no point really in doing so. I would like to point out, though, that there aren't any intellectual deficits with Mr. Ryder that should really cause the court a lot of concern, like, well, poor Mr. Ryder didn't understand these letters that he was getting. Mr. Ryder is an honors graduate of Hope College in Michigan, and he has a master's degree in divinity as well. He did very well in school, and you can tell from his testimony and so forth that he's perfectly capable of understanding. So, any further questions from the panel?
No further questions.
Thank you,
Mr. Koenig, and we'll take the case under advisement. We thank both counsel.